All right, let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to be attempting to scribe today. Matt Stone, if you could back up scribe for me, that'd be great.
Sure.
We were supposed to have a number of new participants on the call today, but I am not seeing them dialing in, so I think we're just going to have a regular call. Okay, our agenda is here. Today on the agenda, today on the agenda, we've got new introductions from new participants. I don't know if anyone new is going to be joining. We have a number of people that have said that they've been wanting to join for a while, but their schedules keep getting in the way. We have a revised W3CTPAC credentials presentation that we need to go over to make sure that we're saying the things that the group wants to say. We've got an update on the linked data signature spec that Dave Longley has done, and we've just made another revision to the HTTP signature spec that we'll cover quickly. Any other updates or changes to the agenda before we get started? Okay, if not, Matt, if you don't mind taking over, I need to talk about the credentials presentation, and then I'll take over with the linked data signature spec, take over scribing then. So.
Sure.
Great, thanks. Okay, so W3C TPAC credentials presentation is here. Let me get a link to that address. We had circulated a presentation that we were giving to the Web Payments Interest Group last week, and then we've taken that presentation and geared it more towards a general presentation to general W3C membership. So the important thing to understand about W3C TPAC is a lot of working groups meet there, and people often have to go to the working groups that they're actively participating in. But there are a number of people that are very interested in learning about new things going on at W3C, like credentials, but they may be tied up on Monday and Tuesday. So on Wednesday, we're doing an unconference presentation around the credentials work, and while the web payments presentation on that Monday-Tuesday is going to focus mostly on payments, the presentation on Wednesday is going to very much talk about education and healthcare and government and other things like that. Okay. So this presentation is the Wednesday presentation. It's supposed to outline a lot of the identity, you know, credentials work, or it's supposed to focus on the identity credentials stuff that this group is working on, specifically around education and healthcare. My hope is that we can get some feedback from folks on the call today to make sure that the changes that were made are appropriate or we need to make further presentations. Yes, presentations on Wednesday, sorry, not on the web. Okay, so I see a ton of different folks in the presentation so people can see it. I'm going to really quickly run through the presentation to see if anyone's got any points that they'd like to make. So I'm on slide two. Actually, we've got two joiners. Who's 202 area code?
Hi, that's me. It's Deborah Everhart.
Hi, Deb. And then 212 area code.
Hi, it's Rebecca Simmons from Sullivan & Cromwell.
Hi, Rebecca. We're going to do an introduction to you right after we get through this presentation.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem whatsoever. Let's see. Okay, so the Rebecca, we were talking about the presentation that we're going to be giving at the World Wide Web Consortium the technical plenary in Sapporo, Japan next week. If you look at the invitation that went out, there's a link for a text chat that you could join, and we could share the presentation with you through that if you want to join.
Thank you.
I'm going to start going through it. So the question that we're posing to the World Wide Web Consortium is whether or not we are ready to start a working group at W3EC around the credentials work. This community group has been operating for about a year and some. The identity credentials work goes back even further into the payments work that was started 4+ years ago. We have gathered quite a bit of evidence. You know, we've got 44 companies responding, many of them, you know, quite a number of large companies that have said that they're really interested in participating in this identity credentials work, the technical work that we're doing. Rebecca, here's the link in IRC. If you click on that link, you should be able to get to it. So the whole purpose of the presentation is to try and convince W3EC membership members that we have not reached yet that they should get involved and start pushing W3EC management for a working group to work on the technical stuff around what we're doing. I'm on page 2 of the presentation. We go and we specify, we provide a high-level definition of what a credential is, talk about some synonyms associated with, what credentials. So other people are calling these verifiable entity attributes. Other organizations are calling them attestations. So we're trying to just get the language right before we jump into the actual discussion. Primarily because we did not get the language right at the New York City face-to-face, and it created a ton of confusion around what exactly we meant with credentials. So we give people a couple of examples, and then we say why the work is important, right? So we need to ensure that customers are who they say they are. We need to prove education qualifications when applying to jobs. Just something to ground the discussion so that everyone in the room comes up to speed pretty quickly. Moving on to slide 3, just some background on the group.
Hey, Manu.
Yeah, Matt.
This is Stan. Do you want us to sort of jump in slide by slide or run through it all and come back to the top?
No, jump in slide by slide.
I think on the examples, we need something that's a little more mid-tier than all of these are pretty regulatory-oriented or plus university degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to see a couple of examples that are more commercial oriented, like the credentials for IT certification, or maybe a trade association like corrosion engineers, or I don't know if that's the right one. That one seems kind of small, but I think practice medicine, practice law is so big. They're so narrowly defined in the industry, and there are so few of them. What we need to say is there is breadth here. There are thousands of trade associations that are trying to figure out how to produce credentials as well.
Okay. So trade associations.
A lot of times medicine and law are kind of hooked up to a university anyway, or to a government regulatory agency.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I've added a comment here, and I'll try to go back through and add something there.
And possibly something lightweight like a CPR certification as well.
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
So I would also consider breaking slide 2 into 2 slides just to avoid word overload, but also there seems like a conceptual boundary between the terms and examples and then maybe in the next one, why.
Got it. Okay, so possibly split out the why into another slide, and that'll
right.
give us more space. Okay. Hey, and Matt, remember to put people's names, colon, and then what they said. Otherwise, the minutes won't be able to. Okay, All right, so we need something more mid-tier, something more commercially oriented, talking about IT certifications, trade associations, and then maybe CPR certifications, and break the Y out into another slide. Okay, we'll do that. Okay, so moving on to slide three, we talk a bit about the credentials community group. It's, you know, broke out of the web payments group. And then got a lot of education folks and healthcare folks and found a good life in the credential CG. We've got a quick note on the organizations that founded the group. There are now 67 members. We have weekly teleconferences. We're open to the public. We've got specifications and implementations, and we've got pilot projects underway. This slide is basically to demonstrate that there's been a lot of progress that's been made over the last year. And usually when W3C members see that there are specs and pilot projects underway, they start pushing a little harder to get a working group created to standardize the technology. Interrupt if you want to say something on any of these slides. Otherwise, I'm just going to kind of barrel through them. Slide four. We talk about the survey questions. So in order to try and mitigate any kind of, insistence that all we're trying to do is solve the same unsolved identity problem over and over and over again that's been tried to be, attempted to be solved since the, mid-90s to and all the way through the 2000s, we are providing use cases, some hard data that these organizations have not seen. And that's basically the credentials use case survey that we did. We are going to say, we've gone out and asked businesses, these are large businesses, what their most compelling business use cases are, what technologies they use, whether or not the technologies meet that organization's needs. And what capabilities do they need? It's very hard to shut the conversation down when you're trying to present just data and what we found out. Moving on to slide five, we have one of the best responses to surveys, I think, that's going to be presented at W3C TPAC. No one's been able to come at the problem with this kind of data before, as far as we know. So we asked 58 organizations to tell us what they want from a credentialing and identity solution standpoint. They are across the organizations. Of those 58, 44 responded, so we have a really, really high response rate, 76%. The organizations that we asked are across payments, education, healthcare, and government, so we have a good wide representation here. And that's also, a good thing, because the only thing we're covering in the web payments group is the payments vertical or the payments industry. We are not necessarily touching on education, healthcare, and government, so this will be a chance to talk about that. And draw those W3C companies into the meeting. Slide six. We just kind of go over some of the general themes, use case themes. So this is different from examples. These are just, themes that we lifted out of the data that we gathered from these 44 organizations. So ensuring that applicants have proper education, proper licensure, and background checks, automatic compliance with regulations, simplified checkout experience, perform know your customer process on customers online before payment in enrollment system. These are high level themes. We may be missing a few, and we may want to reword some of these. So if you've got any input on how we could reword this, that would be really great. At least
what is the KYC process?
It's know your customer. It's identity proofing, effectively. So you walk into a bank to open a new bank account. They ask you for your social security card or passport or driver's license. That's the first part of the know your customer process. And then after that, they'll submit that data to Experian and maybe to get a FICO score on you and all that kind of stuff. So it's a getting to know you process that your bank goes through. And the education industry has.
Kind of a disambiguation?
Sorry, say that again?
Like a disambiguation process, essentially? Or there are three headstones I'm talking about.
It's not necessarily just disambiguation. It's making sure that you're not laundering money, making sure that you're not on a terrorist watch list, making sure that you're so it's partially, yes, disambiguation. Actually, let me rephrase that. Primarily, yes, it's disambiguation to say that they know who you are. They know who they're doing business with, right? They're not just accepting money from a random stranger off the street and funneling it through the payment system. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and KYC is a standard term that people in payments know. It's
yeah,
just, I don't.
Yeah, it's a banking term. But you know what? That's a good point. Let me try to spell out know your customer. Okay, I'm making a note to try and clarify that. Yeah, payments folks really know what KYC is, but I wouldn't expect anyone else to. So I'll try and clarify that language a bit. Okay, anything else on slide 6? Do folks feel like we've captured the major themes there? Okay. All right, so slide 7 through 9 is the same data that it's the same data we're presenting in the other group. So slide 7 is about capabilities. So we're saying, you know, of the organizations across these various industries that we asked, these are the things that they would like to be able to do. So issuing verifiable credentials is very high on the list. And then skipping down to the third one, requesting verifiable credentials is high on the list. But for example, the second item down, storing verifiable credentials, is still high, but it's the lowest one. It's the one that organizations put the least amount of priority on.
Should we sort that by preference so they're organized?
We could. I don't know if I'm going to have the time to do that. It's a graphic. Unfortunately, it's not easily done. It'll take time, and we've got lots of other prep stuff to do. and no, we don't have people to do that, unfortunately. I think it's a good idea, Matt. I don't know if we're going to have the time to do it before we have to present it next week. There's a lot of other prep work we have to do.
Like getting there.
You want to make it. If you assign someone like me to do it, would that be all right?
Yeah,
actually, I think there's a logic in the way that it's. I mean, issuing, storing, requesting, revoking. I think it makes more sense to focus on the ordering the left side in terms of almost the story. Is more. I don't have a problem with it being sorted like this.
And that was the reason it was ordered in the way that it was. It was the life cycle, okay. To follow the life cycle, and then kind of the things that maybe not everybody wants are down at the bottom, the last
four.
Yeah,
another thing that I just learned looking at it, I think the reason that storing is so low is because it's a second or third order problem. You know, once you are able to issue and request credentials, you know, then it occurs to you, oh, I have to put them somewhere.
Right.
So I think that this makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Okay.
Who's that speaking?
John.
John. Thanks, John.
Okay. All right. In any case, there's none of these features that this community group has identified over the past year showed up as we could do without that feature, right? Nothing came in at like the 10-20%. Basically, just about every organization across all these different industries rated these as highly desirable or pretty highly desirable features. Okay.
We had
and then,
44 responding, and still 27 said they wanted the least valuable thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, so next slide, slide eight, which technologies are in use today? The reason we gathered data on this was to, there have been a number of people that have said, this is already a solved problem. Credentials and identity is already a solved problem. All the technologies exist out there to do it. They're OAuth 1.0 or OpenID. It's just that these organizations don't quite know how to put them together to come up with a solution. And so we asked organizations, you know, do you know of these technologies? Effectively, you know, which technologies do you use today to try and address your credentialing needs? And we got a number of organizations. We got a decent bit of I don't knows. We got like 15% saying I don't know, but most of them identified the technologies that they are using today. And in the next slide, it'll say, you know, many of them say that these technologies solve some but not all of their problems. I think some of the really interesting information in here is that the vast majority of these industries, whether it's healthcare or government, depend on PDF, email, and X509 certificates. So it's all fairly old manual technologies to do what they do with credentials. So I thought that was really good data. And the other interesting bit is that a number of them really know about OAuth 2, but for whatever reason, they don't. It has been claimed that OAuth 2 can solve a lot of these problems, and that the organizations just don't know about it. But the feedback that we're seeing is that all these organizations not only know about OAuth 2.0, but they use it, and it doesn't solve their problem. So that was a good data point to counteract some of the friction that, or some of the kind of naysaying that people have been doing about the work that we're involved with. Okay, and then slide nine is just, do the technologies that you listed above, do they meet, you know, your needs or not? The vast majority of the respondents said that they only meet some of their needs. There was actually only one participant that said it meets all of their needs, but they clicked other, and they said that they have their own homebrew solution. So when you count that one out, I mean, if, you know, they have their own internal thing that meets their needs, but they said also that clearly something else is needed for wider industry, a wider industry ecosystem to exist. So basically, gaps exist in the current technology solutions. Clearly, there are gaps that exist in the current technology solutions. So there is a problem here. That's effectively what this data is showing. Slide 10 is basically a follow-up. So we basically lay out all the use cases, and we lay out all of the use cases. We give people, you know, a view into the data. And then after we do that, we just start talking about the credentials ecosystem. So here's the ecosystem that we're talking about. The Credentials CG is talking about an ecosystem where there are issuers, there are identity providers or vaults, and there are consumers of these credentials. We give people some examples of each one of these, participants in the ecosystem. And then we don't go into a tremendous amount of depth. So the slide is just to give people an idea of the ecosystem. Slide 11 says that there's a strong desire to participate in this work. So we've got 17 W3C members said that they will participate. We've got seven organizations that said they're not W3C members, but they will join and participate. And we've got 16 organizations sitting on the fence, either because they don't know if the funding's there or if they have the people to participate. And this is fairly typical this early in the process. Like, once the working group is created, then those companies end up either joining if it impacts their business lines, or they, you know, for whatever reason, they don't have the funding or the money to participate. But
Manu.
Yeah.
On slide 10, Deb made a very good point in the IRC chat, which was, why aren't holders a stakeholder in the ecosystem? So just general users of the system, who the people who actually receive and hold on to credentials, should probably be listed as a stakeholder.
Yes, that is a good point. I think we were not...
The entire system is designed around them, so we should definitely... it's a user-centric credential system, so we should definitely have them in there as a stakeholder.
Right, and Deb asked another question on IRC. Is there any data about whether methods are meeting the holder's needs? Are you, Deb, do you mean current methods, or do you mean the methods we're proposing?
Well, either, I guess.
So,
you could perfectly meet the needs of the issuers and consumers, but still not meet the needs of the holders, right?
That's true.
That's true. One of the needs that we address in the design is privacy, and we could talk about that. We're not going to have any data for any of the new stuff for we don't need data for any of the new design or anything like that, because it doesn't exist. It's not out there. And the survey that we put out there was to organizations that are effectively, I guess they would also give out credentials. A lot of these organizations would give out credentials to the employees and things of that nature. But I don't think we asked any specific questions about holders.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons we didn't is because we weren't surveying people that would be holding credentials. That would be
I recognize it's a separate body of research, and I'm not suggesting that the research that you did covered that, but it's still valid to list them here as a stakeholder, right?
Definitely. And Mona's editing the slide 10.
Yeah, so I'm adding students, employees, professionals.
Customers.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, the holders, the holder's point is really interesting, because when we get in these groups, it's usually companies that are talking about providing products to their customers, and the assumption that we make is that the companies are going to provide a solution that's compelling to their customers, and that's kind of how the holders are channeled into what we discuss. But we certainly do not have any consumer advocacy groups involved at this time. We are not really that deep into the legal ramifications of the ecosystem that we're building that would affect holders. I think it's a great point, Deb, and we should try to figure out a way of gathering that information. There is another part of the other thing I guess we're a bit concerned about is whether or not holders are actually going to know what they want or need. They do know, for example, holders know that they need to apply for a job, and they would like the process to be as smooth as possible. But when it comes to, what does the ecosystem look like, I don't know if they necessarily care. We need to find a way of getting at that information. It's not clear to me how exactly that happens.
Kind of a tricky discussion, because when the issuers are talking about, facilitating labor management or job hunt and background checking to the employers and background check organizations that are going to kind of vet that data, in some ways the holders are kind of the product. They're not really the customer in this ecosystem very much. They're just sort of the bit of inventory that's getting pushed around.
Yeah, and I think many holders would not like to be, seen as a product. But effectively, I guess there are different ways to look at it. From the standpoint of an issuer, the customer is the product, and that, you know, you're packaging up some piece of information about them and handing it over to them. I think that's the key difference here, right? So if you look at like Google Search or any of these, you know, social networking companies, the customer is very much the product. Their information is being bought and then resold to other people, or it's being collected and resold to other people. Whereas in this credential ecosystem, it's a bit different in that the holder goes to an issuer, pays for something, pays for the product, which is themselves, and then they get to hold on to it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think we want, personally, I was a little cynical before, but perhaps, I think we want issuers to think of holders not as products, but as customers. But they do kind of get lost in the mix.
Yes. Yeah, so holders. So holders are customers.
Another example of a holder would be citizens.
Yep, good point. Okay, I've added that to the slide deck. Okay, all right, so I think that's good. Jumping ahead a bit to slide, is there anything else on the credentials ecosystem? So now we have holders, credential issuers, identity providers, vaults, and credential consumers. Okay, anything else on slide 10 before we jump to slide 12? Okay, so slide 11 is just about participation in W3C. This is effectively to show other W3C members that they wouldn't be going it alone. One of the things that takes the most amount of time is to convince W3C members, or at least, you know, people operating in an industry, that they're not the only ones that want a problem solved, and that there will be other organizations that will help to try and solve the problem in a standards compliant way. So this slide basically says we have gathered data and we can show you that there are other organizations that want to participate, and we know who all of them are. So that's usually a fairly compelling argument to get these types of groups started. And then slide 12 is, I think, where we need the most amount of help here. The general question is, you know, what else do we need to get the work started at W3C, right? So there are a couple of things that we're trying to do with this presentation. One, it's just general education. We want the group, you know, the people in the room to be aware that this stuff is going on, especially if they have a business interest in it. W3C advisory committee reps, these are the people that come and represent their organizations at W3C, are very, very busy, and they usually don't get to see everything. So this is one way of getting their attention. The question that we ask, you know, who in the room would support this work at W3C, is a way to get people's cards to just, you know, get a contact at their organization that would support the work. So we're hoping to add to the 44 organizations that have already said that they want to that they're interested in this stuff. But the next couple of questions are a bit more open-ended. So strategically at W3C, the web payments group is going to be discussing the identity and credentialing work, and they're going to be trying to figure out whether or not they should help write one of the charters around identity and credentials, or if it's just not their place to do so. And if it's not their place to do so, they're going to try and suggest where the work should be done. Like, for example, one potential outcome is that an interest group is created after W3C TPAC that works on a charter and you know, what the ecosystem and capabilities of this ecosystem looks like. So what we could do in this room is say, you know, what is the realistic next step that we could take? So one of the things we were hoping at the beginning of this year was that we would be able to piggyback on the web payments work. And that has not come to pass because the web payments folks are not identity credentials folks. They're not tapped into that side of their organization, and they feel a bit shaky about making those proposals. The other reason it didn't happen sooner is because the payments group really wanted to focus on payments. Identity and credentialing is important, but it's not in the critical path for getting something into the browser in the next 2 years. So the question, at least to this group, is what would we like to see happen next that's realistic? I don't think a working group as the next step is realistic. I do think having a very rapid workshop after the meeting, maybe in January or February, or to immediately launch into an interest group that then has a meeting, a face-to-face meeting at the early part of next year, is a realistic ask. So let me leave it there and see what folks think. Or what do we want to see as the outcome of W3C TPAC and giving this presentation?
What are the expectations as far as going to an interest group? I mean, is there like a set transition schedule, or is it possible to do an interest group but have it be kind of more accelerated than usual?
It's very varied. So each interest group is very different because the industries involved are different. So the ones that are more regulation heavy tend to work a bit slower. The ones that are just pure technology interest groups tend to run much faster. I think because we have had because we have done a lot of work in this group around like executive summaries and terminology, and we've got specs and operational technology and pilots, all that stuff is stuff that an interest group would do. So we've done a lot of the work that an IG would do. But I think that the W3C management would have a hard time saying, we trust everything the CG has done, let's just push them straight into a working group without having some other organization at W3C that has a more official stance endorse the work. So one way is the web payments group could endorse the work, but probably just endorse it into an interest group, into creating an interest group. So, sorry, long-winded answer to your question. I think asking for an interest group is probably the safest thing that we can do, in that we should be able to create one in the next couple of months. We've done all of the background work that they've required us to do. I think at the WG is a tall ask. A workshop is just, all the workshop would do would be to effectively do the survey work that we did and then ask each one of those organizations to submit a paper, like a 2-3 page paper about what they want the credentialing ecosystem to look like. And at this point, you know, I don't know what the rest of the folks in the group feel, but it feels like we would just be rehashing things that we've already gone over in this group. Brian, I don't know if I answered your question with all that. So.
Yes.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that everyone in this group wants to see this turn into a working group as soon as possible, right? Or find out that that's not going to happen for a while and effectively take the group somewhere else where we can do that, like, for example, IMS Global.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So in order to get to a working group as soon as we can, I think we're not going to be able to just transition to a working group because there has been enough hand-wringing at W3C about whether or not we're doing the right thing here, right? Whether or not this is actually going to be successful. They're very concerned about starting a working group that may not end in success. And so the best next step is to create an interest group and then potentially have a workshop at the very beginning of next year, so January, February timeframe, to just get everyone in the same room and just convince everyone that this is what, you know, we all want to do. And then immediately, hopefully work on the charter in parallel to that workshop. And the workshop might be just a charter review. And then charter approval would take another 1 to 3 months. And the working group would be created by, you know, March, April of next year. I mean, that's the best case scenario. But in the meantime, you know, the pilots that are going on can still proceed. The technology that's been built out can still proceed. So is that okay with everyone? Is the ask here, I mean, on this last slide, is the ask, we want an interest group created. We want to proceed to an official, you know, an interest group is more official than a community group, and an interest group is usually the one that specifies what the credentials ecosystem looks like, what the capabilities are, and they're the ones that write the charter. Would that be an acceptable next step to the folks on the call?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So John and Eric are saying plus one to a working group. Are you saying that, like, instead of an IG, like, really push for a working group, or are you saying IG or working group? Or IG leading the working group?
Sorry, I had trouble getting off mute. I really don't understand the subtlety between the two. I'm not familiar with that. I would just like things to move as quickly as possible.
Right. The interest group is primarily, and it's kind of like an exploratory group. So a community group, which is what we are right now, is an experimental pre-standards group. Anything goes. You don't need any kind of approval from W3C membership. There's no staff that they allocate. The next step is an interest group. And an interest group typically needs minimum buy-in from W3C membership. We have 17 members that have already said that they'd like to see this stuff happen. So I think it's a fairly easy sell to get an IG started. And then the IG doesn't do the technical work. They absolutely do not do the technical work, but they do work on stuff leading up to the technical work. So effectively what we've been doing in this group is kind of IG work, but IG work happens in a more official capacity. Like, it's got the W3C membership signing off on the group being created and things of that nature. And after the IG has created the charter, the technical working group charter, that's when the group actually starts working on the technical work. So a working group works on technical stuff. It's very constrained. If you look at scope, CGs have the largest scope. They can look at just about anything. IGs have a much narrower scope and work on setting up the technical work to succeed. And then the working groups have the most narrow scope, and they focus purely on solving the technical problem in front of them. Did that help, John?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and there's another thing about people, time, and money. W3C will assign staff to an interest group and a working group, and organizations, once they see a working group happen, will actually start assigning engineers that are paid to work on the work. So you get more resources the further down the line you get. Okay, anything else on the presentation? So I think the ask is what would it take to get an IG started? We're asking for an IG at W3C TPAC. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay. I have a meeting with the CEO and the staff, and that's what I'm going to go in and ask for then. With all the data that we have that we've gathered today. Okay. Anything else on the presentation or what we're trying to get out of TPAC? Okay. If there is nothing else, I want to get and Rebecca, if you're, are you still on the call, Rebecca?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Thank you for being so patient. Would you mind giving the group an intro to yourself, just a bit about your background and why you're interested in the group and that kind of stuff?
Sure. Although you'll immediately see that I'm going to be more of a listener, at least at the beginning, than anything else. But I'm a lawyer in New York. I work at a law firm where I represent a number of banks, payment systems, and the like. More from the, I guess now the old-fashioned payment system, the clearing organizations and the payment settlements organizations and that sort of thing. I've been getting more involved in some of the more current options for payment, digital payment, virtual currencies and the like, just beginning to move in that direction, and was at the Chicago Payments Conference where I met Manu. And I'm interested in this both because it's obviously where things are moving, but also I did have some prior involvement. For example, I represented the banks that put together Identris a number of years ago, although I was on the regulatory front, not the drafting front, although we ended up revising rules and working with them to some degree on getting themselves set up as well. So different thoughts coming together, and it seemed like this issue of identity is at the center of a lot of the issues that both my current and hopefully future clients are focusing on now. So when Manu mentioned, I have a fairly extensive background in sort of the commercial law that underpins a number of these things, like the UCC, which governs most payments as they now stand, and which we're all trying to figure out how to adjust it to accommodate new approaches to making payments. So we got to talking at that conference in Chicago, and Manu suggested that I might listen in and maybe eventually contribute, if that's all right. So hopefully
Great.
That's what you wanted to hear, Manu. But
yes, absolutely. Thank you, Rebecca, and welcome. I think the main point here is that we don't have a lot of folks from the legal and regulatory side involved in the identity and credentials work, and it's an absolute, I think, requirement for us to be successful to have those voices at the table and you know, having them giving us feedback as we go through here, because the technology has to fit into the legal framework that we have, or we need to figure out you know, where the technology might butt heads with the legal framework that we have today. So thank you, Rebecca, for taking the time and joining us on these calls.
Of course, it's very interesting. So.
Okay, that's the call. Well, let's see. No, actually, it's not the call for today. Longley, we've got two updates for Linked Data Signature Spec and HP Signatures. Would you mind giving us a quick 7-minute rundown on those?
Sure. Do we have a link to the... get it real quick. All right. Here's a link to the most recent update to the Linked Data Signature Spec. The spec is still kind of in a pretty rough form. There's a number of rough draft. There's a number of different issues that still exist in the spec. But this update was primarily about two things. The first thing was getting this specification in shape so that we've removed a number of things that were not necessary in the spec and moved them out to other specs. So this spec previously talked about not only being able to put digital signatures on credentials, but also how you register keys that are used to sign those credentials and things of that nature.
I'm sorry. I thought Deb had already introduced herself at another call, but I'm totally wrong. Deb, would you mind doing an intro to yourself?
Yeah, that's fine. But do you want to finish with the signatures first?
No, we'll push that off to another call. I'd much rather get introductions done. The Linked Data Signatures update can wait. So go ahead, Deb.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. So I'm Deb Everhart, and formerly at Blackboard, now an independent subject matter expert. And my area of expertise is in academic and learning credentials, which, of course, is an exploding area right now. So I'm working on this on several different working groups and research projects. And also one thing of of note for this group probably is that last year I chaired the endorsement working group in the Badge Alliance.
Great. And welcome, Deb. I'm sorry, we've exchanged so many emails, I just assumed that you had we'd given an introduction to you on this call, so my apologies. And welcome.
Happy to be here.
Okay. Let's go ahead and jump back into linked data signatures. How's this for being pulled from one extreme to the next? So go ahead, Longley.
Sure. Sure, no problem. So as I was saying, the updating the spec was about two different things. The first thing was removing parts that were in the spec that were not specifically about signatures. They had to do with things related to signatures. And the other part was about updating the spec to use a new, what's called a new normalization algorithm that has been, that spec has also been updated. And so with these credentials that we're creating and with the technology that we use, we need to be able to sign credentials, and then we also need to do what's called composing identities, which composing an identity. And composing an identity means being able to select a number of different credentials that all specify attributes about a certain identity, and being able to put them all together to get a larger view of an identity. It's not always a complete view of everything about that identity, it's just a few little pieces of information that are each asserted by different credentials. And once you have that composed view of an identity in the technology, you also need to be able to digitally sign that identity before you hand it over to somebody. So being able to do that requires a certain, a new kind of algorithm, a new kind of data, linked data normalization algorithm. And because we had a new normalization algorithm, we also had a new signature algorithm that has to use it. And so this spec was updated just recently to use that new algorithm and to remove bits of the spec that don't need to be in here so we can keep it as simple as possible. So this is for the more technically minded people. You can look over the spec if you want to, if you have any questions about the direction we're heading with signatures for these credentials. We're still going to be going back through. There are a number of different issues that we need to address that have a lot to do with like algorithmic agility, the ability to use different kinds of cryptographic primitives with signatures and things of that nature, so that as cryptography changes over time, we don't need to put out an entirely new signature spec just because the cryptography that's available to us has changed. So there's a number of different issues like that that will get addressed and we'll clean up with the spec. But overall, this, the spec is a lot simpler and shorter than it used to be, which is helpful for just having people being able to consume it and understand what its actual focus is. Mano, I don't know if you wanted to talk about, you know, just for, I don't remember what the update to the HTTP signature spec was. So if you want to talk about that.
Sure. So the HTTP signature spec has been updated as well. These are kind of the nuts and bolts that make the credentials ecosystem that we're describing work. We had let one of the, let me go back. So the linked data signature specification is fairly high level and it's being worked on at the W3C. The HTTP signature spec is low level and is being worked at the Internet Engineering Task Force. But we use the HTTP signature spec so that software agents, so these are just computer programs, can operate on behalf of their controllers. So basically, so you can have a piece of software that's running out there on your behalf that's collecting credentials and using them to do certain things, like, for example, searching for jobs or applying for new positions or ordering medication that you need. We expect software agents to be able to do that. And for that to happen, you need something like the HTTP signature specification. This has been in development for 4+ years. It has stabilized around 2 years ago. Really, we're just waiting on implementations and a test suite, and to do that stuff, we just need funding to finish it off. It just hasn't been a very high priority. Henry Story, who is from the Social Web Working Group, he joined us on a call 2 weeks ago and last week, is working on an implementation of the HP signature spec. So we need to do, this is highly important work, but it's so low level and it's been baked and done for a while that we don't really talk about it that much. But we just revved the spec. There really weren't any updates other than changing where the authors live and their current phone numbers. So all the technical stuff in the spec really has not changed. And that's it for HP signatures. Okay, so that brings us to the end of our call. Next week is W3C TPAC. We are going to cancel the calls for next week, but the week after that, we will certainly meet and do a rundown of what happened at TPAC. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of stuff that happens there next week. So no call next week, but one the following week. Is there anything that we should be aware of before the call in 2 weeks? Anything else that we need to be on top of?
Why don't you send out an email when you get some results from next week so that we don't have to wait 2 whole weeks to find out.
Okay. Suspense is too much for you. You need to know.
That's right.
The day. Okay. All right. I will do that. Okay. Anything else before we go?
Have fun.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for the call this week, and we'll chat again in 2 weeks. Thanks,
thank
all.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Ben. See ya.